Well, if you talk to any radio producer, they will tell you that your show should have a couple of segments. So we've completed the A segment and are moving on to B segment. So if anyone wants to take us on.
Welcome back to another episode of
As you will come.
Go back to commercial.
Well, this time we have our own Dale Granfield, and he is native of Bethlehem. That is in Bethlehem. Dale Granfield came back to us, and I hate telling too much before you actually answer the question, but he is now in a new role in the cathedral in Bethlehem. So to start us off, thank you for agreeing to do this with us. Tell us a little bit about where you served previously and about your new role at the City Cathedral.
Thanks, Sandy. I am Dale. I have been called to the cathedral as missioner. I have just come back from Cleveland, Ohio, where I served as assistant rector at St. Paul's Church in Cleveland Heights. My role at St. Paul's was twofold. My areas of oversight were liturgy and outreach. And that can be very busy. St. Paul's is the largest parish in the Diocese of Ohio and serves the inner ring suburb of Cleveland, which is an interesting context. Cleveland itself is an interesting context because it's a city that continues to be fraught by race and by economic difference. And St. Paul's sits at the top of the hill, literally, and serves a constituency that is predominantly white and master's degree educated and all of that, and is trying to hear God's call to be in the neighborhood in new ways in this age. So that leads to what I'm now doing here at the cathedral. The folks at the cathedral did some amazing visioning work over the past little while, listening to leaders in the community of Southside Bethlehem and Fountain Hill, and dreaming about what the cathedral is called to be and do in these next years, vis-a-vis the community. And one of the things that the cathedral recognized was the desire, the need, to venture the bet and have a clergy person whose ministry is devoted to inviting the people of the cathedral into deeper relationship, particularly with families and children in the community. And so that is what I'm doing here. And it's a creative and big job, and one which I am discovering little bit by little bit, day by day. Sometimes feeling my way right now, 3 months into it.
Well, Devin, we spoke in our pre-interview. You talked a bit about how the job was requiring something that I thought was a lovely phrase. You talked about radical curiosity. Tell us what you mean by radical curiosity and how that's helping to orient or guide you in this new role.
Sure. Radical curiosity. So Kyle, you were a serious child. I was the child who disassembled all my toys. And the reason was, I took them all apart. And the reason wasn't because I wanted to take them apart, because I wanted to see how they worked. I wanted to see what was going on the inside. And that is a core of my vocation. And we talk a lot in the church about radical openness and radical love, but the idea of radical curiosity, to me, coming from that core charism of mine, is not just curiosity that is at the root of who we are, that piece of the radical word, but also curiosity that ventures the bet to do radical things, to ask radical questions. Just as a good journalist asks the hard questions, sometimes the simple questions, but wants to always turn over the stones and go further on in. I think the invitation, particularly in this time, when the church is no longer at the center of society, the desire to be ultimately curious, to not assume we know anything, and to go out and to begin to ask those questions seems to me to be very important. So that's what I call radical curiosity.
When we talked to you, you mentioned that curious sort of broke down, and it was at a previous program church that you served at. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience and difference between being experts in our community work versus being companions and listeners?
Mm-hmm. So I think there's an intersectionality for the Episcopal Church of a handful of what I might call demons of our tradition, that we have to be constantly aware of. One is, for example, as the recent Perkiel Report data has shown, we are more white than the average in society. So that automatically justifies us towards whiteness. We tend to be much more privileged and act out of a much more educated and a much more seated place in society. And so those things automatically, when we start on our way out into the neighborhood, act against us in being experts, but when we are trying to be actually companions. And what's interesting about missionality, the kind of the model of mission that the church has had for at least probably since the late Victorian age, is, and you know, we give up things hard in the church. One of the interesting things about the model of mission is the idea that we always need to be on our way out to do something for somebody. And that's a great thing. I don't want to throw any shade on that reality. There are a lot of needs in the world around us, and there's a need for us to be active in working to solve those things. But that doesn't necessarily call us into the depth of what is Christian mission, which is to be companions with, to literally find ourselves, discover ourselves, actually be in community with people who are like and unlike us. So to your question about the breakdown of that, what I found in my work in Cleveland Heights was that it was oftentimes difficult in that context, a context that was extremely privileged, to not immediately always reach for the people who were poor and black, for example, and say, we're going to solve their problem by teaching them to be just like us. Right? And we laugh about that, but that's the reality of the way we behave oftentimes, because that's where we act out of. That's the hard truth. And what that looked like oftentimes is us using language of, we're going to mentor them, or we're going to teach them financial skills, or we're going to do all of those good things. But the call of Christian mission, as I understand it, the world according to Dale, theology according to Dale, which is probably always a scary thing, is not down gradient. When Christ calls us to the service, and I kept saying this, and I fell into the same pattern because I'm white and I'm privileged, but it is not to be down gradient, but it is to be equals, to be creating equality and communion and love.
You know, I was thinking about what you were saying, and I was thinking about Lynn's story earlier about spending a year going to meetings, that sort of witness. It seemed like a sort of powerful connection there, and this sort of thing of this work can be scary, blessing, seeking to share a blessing can be scary. Going, as Gideon Moore said earlier, going can be scary. So how do we learn to be vulnerable when we go?
If we don't get to be the experts, if I have to say, well, you know, I gotta, you know, leave my engineering degree at the door or whatever, how do I vulnerably go out? Are there other ways that I can learn to do that more effectively?
I think
one of the ways, Kyle, is to really begin to take honest stock of who we are. And for me, for that, I'm kind of to couch this in my own reality, is it is less vulnerable for me to go and sit with people who are poor than it is for me to sit with people who are rich, because I was raised blue collar. And so one of the great difficulties, one of the great places of otherness that I have encountered in my ministry is learning to be with people who are different by virtue of that dynamics. And I think each of us and each of our congregations has to take real stock of who we are. And not assume that just because we want to be about service, that is always the work of Christian mission. Those two can exist in parallel to each other and not necessarily the same. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm trying to, so
you relieve me of the burden of wanting to solve someone's problems. Give me a sermon about the courage how did you learn to feel more comfortable and able to sort of do your job in your ministry in those communities where you didn't feel like you had the sort of natural acclimation. It doesn't ever get more comfortable. I think when you talk to runners and they ask when is it going to get less painful, it doesn't ever. And I think the reality of the context of our world is calling us into places in which we are always going to be uncomfortable. That's what the courage, which I think hopefully is a kind of a divine gift to us, as well as the peace that passes understanding, is necessary. But I think when we get into places of comfort, when we feel comfortable, we probably have moved outside of the place of being where Christ actually wants us to be. Again, theology important.
So it sounds like you're telling me I also don't have to be perfect.
Right?
No.
You said to mention that and try. And in my ministry thus far, what I have found in missional work is that more often we go out and we fail and then try to learn from it than we do really solve anything. The world's pretty broken.
Thank you guys for two more.
These way of love practices are related to each other, as we learned this morning. Can you talk about the role of prayer in supporting community-based ministry? How can that practice of prayer of that time guide our work as we go into the community?
I find for myself that prayer, intercessory prayer, about this work is indispensable. I pray daily for the children and families of the South Side of Bethlehem, because if I'm not praying for them, then the likelihood is I'm not going to be faithful in any way in helping the people of the cathedral engage. And I think likewise, as I discover who is excited in the cathedral about going out into the community, they need to be people of discernment as well, because part of the failing and trying again, is discernment, and that happens through prayer. That happens through being really grounded in something other than volunteerism.
That's a little practical. The way of love, it's all about forming habits in our life, in our faith, with help from ancient and modern traditions. For the practice of going outside of comfort zones, of walking like and living like Jesus, what are those traditions? It's neighborhood walks. Can you tell us about how walking in neighborhoods can and teach us to cross boundaries, listen, and deeply and live in Jesus.
Sure. Sandy, you experienced this.
I did, last Sunday.
Last Sunday afternoon, Sandy and I and a group of folks from the cathedral went out and walked part of our neighborhood, just for walking's sake. What I will say is this, is one of the first things I recommend that anybody does who is involved in inviting the church into missional work is the easy task of going into your database, pulling all of the addresses of all of your members, and plotting them on a Google map. To tell the truth about where you live. Because oftentimes, and this is one of the demons of our tradition, is that the Episcopal Church has been a church completely invested in white flame. And so most of the time, our parishes, when they are downtown, are primarily populated by people who come from outside of the community. And that's okay, no hate on that. But the reality is we have to tell that story. We have to be real with that to ourselves before we can really talk about how we're going to get out of the community and be part of the community and build community around us or be part of the community building community with us. And so so one of the easy entry-level ways of beginning to overcome that reality, the destination parish mentality or reality, is to go out and walk in the community. Because you begin when you get out of your car, when you're walking the sidewalk, it's a much different experience than if you're driving through. Number two, if you do it in a group, it's not quite as terrifying. And you know that many of our parishes live in the neighborhoods where people say, don't go there, right? And so if you go there, I promise you it will be transformative. And it will begin to tell you a story about what community actually is that that you don't know already. And we were invited. Our little groupito was walking along in Fountain Hill, and we were invited to sit down with a family who was having a party out in their backyard. Radical hospitality in the community, a community that most people would say don't live there. That's not a place. That's not a place you want to go, or that's not a place where you want your kids to go to school. These folks, from their porches and from their backyards, were like, why don't y'all come over here? Why don't you come and be with us? And of course, we were on route, so we didn't stop and have a beer, as they invited us to have a beer. But we probably should have. We probably should have. And that probably would have been transformative as well. So so easy, entry-level, basic missional activity, get a group together and go and walk your neighbor.
It will be transformative.
It will be transformative. Well, Dylan, you have a lot to think about. Thank you so much for seeing our next round of conversations, and thank you so much for the ministry here.
You're welcome.